Franco is pretty smart, but Franco is a child. And when it comes to the day of the contest, I'm his father. He comes to me for advices. So it's not that hard for me to give him the wrong advices.
Hey, what's up, guys? Welcome to Advices Radio. I'm your host, Scott McNally. This is episode number 68, and today we are talking to the mind behind mindandmuscle.net, Eric Markowitz. He is equal part scientist and equal part businessman. This combination makes for one hell of a dangerous person in our industry. He's developed a lot of the pro hormones that are currently on the market today, and he has plans to create a lot more cool stuff. So we're going to talk about his ideas today. And one more personal note, guys, I have another pro. So the other week I mentioned Joe Russo, who turned pro in classic physique. Well, this week at Team Universe, Kara Trebisch managed to win first place out of about 37 girls, and she is now an IFBB pro. I couldn't be more proud of her. I couldn't be more proud of the way she's handled herself through a difficult diet. It was all worthwhile. We've gotten it. So what's next? Both of them are going to jump straight in to the Chicago Pro, which will be this weekend. If you guys are in the Tinley Park area, definitely stop by, look for us. Joe and I are going to road trip out starting on Thursday. I plan on documenting the whole thing as we carb him up and get him ready for the show. We'll be uploading this to Instagram minute by minute as it happens. And of course, we'll see Kara, and hopefully we'll get to see a bunch of other people too. I know that Dave Kalik is going to be there. We got to hook up with Dave. He's got Adam Young. Hopefully we can get Adam on some video too. It'll be a lot of fun. So guys, stay tuned for that, and let's get to Eric. Back to Advices Radio. I'm Scott McNally, and with me today, back on the microphone, we haven't had him here in a while, Eric Markowitz of Mind and Muscle. Eric, thank you for being with me, brother. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Scott. Appreciate you having me on, man. It's going to be a good time.
So guys, for those of you that don't know, Eric is the patent holder and the creator of a lot of the pro hormone products that are on the market today. Eric, which one specifically are you holding?
So 1-DHEA, 4-DHEA, and 19-NOR-DHEA. So you might know them as 1-Andro, 4-Andro, and 19-NOR-Andro. So they're kind of some of the last legal pro hormones left on the market. There's a few others out there that are kind of, you know, sitting out there, Epiandro, a few other things. But for the most part, those are the big three that are left on the market. And then I've got patent pendings on some of the progestins that are out on the market as well. Hmm. And a brand new progestin I'm going to talk about that hopefully will get patent issuance on relatively soon. Okay. So we're just in the final stages of that. So, you know, I've always been, just a little bit of background on me, I've always been fascinated with steroids. You know, they just, I don't know, fascinated me right from day one, right when DHEA and 4-Andro came out back in the day with Mark McGuire. You know, I always, like every kid, right, looking for that edge, looking for something different, something that can give me a boost in activity. So, you know, I just dug into it, and then I was lucky enough to study under Seth Roberts, who's brilliant pharmacologist. He's absolutely, you know, one of the most brilliant guys I've ever met. So I'll start off with a couple stories. So interestingly enough, you know, steroids, you know, here's the thing about steroids, right? Everyone wants a one-size-fits-all answer to steroids. Yeah. And the reality of it is that things really are not the same in every case. Enzymes are different. The androgen receptor is different, which we'll talk about, in different people, even at different times, which they're finding out. You know, you get more androgen receptor activity after working out, which makes total sense, right? So, So if you look at it, the best steroid I've ever used in my entire life was a pro hormone called methyl 5-alpha. So it was basically, you know, sort of the epiandro or the androsterone, with methylation on it. And the active steroid, methyl DHT, was actually nowhere near as good.
Really?
It was actually the cleanest, most effective, fat-burning, muscle-building, strength-building steroid I've ever used. And it became a Schedule III, so it disappeared off the market. But it was just amazing stuff. And I think a lot of it is that if you get enough into the muscle cell, the enzymes in there will actually work in reverse. And so, you know, it gives it that kind of ability to hang around long enough so the enzymes could actually reverse it and make a DHT analog effective in the muscle cells. Because DHT is really anabolic, but it just gets cleared from the muscles really quickly. Hmm. So, you know, it's interesting. No one has brought that out, but if there's some enterprising overseas guys that, you know, where steroids are legal and hopefully they'll be decriminalized here one day, you know, with all the marijuana decriminalization, I think it's about time to decriminalize steroids.
Good luck with that. Yeah, I don't see it happening, right?
No, probably not for some time. But boy, it would be a great thing for people in general just to have active, have the ability to use what they want. So a couple of things I've been researching. I found a modification for traditional steroids like testosterone and EQ and some of those, nandrolone, that will actually double, if not triple, their strength and effectiveness.
Really?
So when you inject them, they will actually hang around longer and be active longer, which should, effectively, based on the studies, double their activity. So again, some of this stuff is illegal, so it'll never be brought out. But it's amazing the kind of things that can be done and still are just not known with steroids, even with, the amount of products on the market and research and the amount of time that's been out there.
Hmm. So could you say... employ somebody in, say, the Netherlands or somewhere where like doing this type of research would be legal. Would that be an option? Because it just sounds like this would be some amazing stuff to actually bring to life. Like it could change the world.
Yeah, well, absolutely. I mean, if it was, I'd have to research and find a country where it's legal.
Yeah.
But the main thing is that you can't prep it for sale in the United States. So I mean, they're not going to look the other way. So I mean, you would only be able to sell it in those countries that have decriminalized steroid laws. And I don't know off top of my head which ones do.
Right.
But, for someone that would be interested, I mean, I'd be more than happy to license it to them if they, if they will, obviously only sell it in the countries where it's legal.
Right.
But I mean, if you have a doubling the effect of testosterone, right, which means you could maybe use half as much or certainly have a doubling of effect, which is probably what everyone wants, it would be really compelling. And so what it does is it kind of works as a methyl group. So what it does is it allows the testosterone to hang around longer because it slows down some of the enzymes that get rid of testosterone, which would be glucuronidase, sulfation, some of those things. So kind of like a methyl group.
So basically, are you saying then that it will last longer? It won't break down. So you'll end up getting higher concentrations in your blood over a period of time?
In blood in the muscle. Yep.
Okay. Exactly. Okay. Wow.
So, yeah. Some really cool stuff that I've been working on. And so we have another pro hormone coming out. Actually, like I said, we're about to get issuance, hopefully, on alpha progesterone, hydroxyprogesterone, which if you look at the hydroxyprogestins, they convert into androgens as well, just like the DHEA derivatives. They're a two-step, one or two-step, depending on the enzyme system. But they also have some really good, activity on their own. And so, this will lead into kind of our discussion about esters and steroid activity.
Okay.
So if you look at the steroid itself that we're looking at, when you attach an ester to it, it actually makes it very progestational. So the 1-hydroxyprogesterone on its own is 1/17th the activity of progesterone. So it's not a strong progestin.
Hmm.
But when you add an acetate ester to it, you're seeing actually more than 100% activity. So what that means is, and people don't understand, is that small modifications to a steroid molecule can have a bunch of different effects. So it looks like short esters, you've always heard the story that, oh man, test prop is way better. You got to use test prop. I get such a better effect. Have you heard that before?
I've heard of the people saying they use that for cutting and then they use, long acting test for bulking.
Yeah. So if you look at short esters, like the props and the acetates, they may actually allow the steroid to bind to the androgen receptor without having the ester cleaved. And that's going to change the activity, which is what's shown in this progestin case. But something like a decanoate ester probably wouldn't do that. So all the bro lore where, they said, test prop feels a lot different and, it feels stronger and I just don't get the same effect from an enthanate or something like that, probably is true. So even though it kind of defies logic, The fact is that these molecules will definitely have different effects based on some of the modifications that you make, like esters. So it's interesting as we, you know, as we read about things to see, you know, how sometimes people are completely wrong, sometimes they're completely right. But in many cases, they're both wrong and right. A lot of it is dose dependent or just, you know, modification dependent.
Man, this is some deep stuff already. I'm just trying to, I'm trying to keep up with you here.
So yeah, sorry. I mean, I you know, I dig very deep into this stuff because it is a passion of mine, and it's unfortunate because so many people just don't have an understanding of these kinds of concepts. And so, as I was saying, they kind of want a one size fits all answer. Or if new information comes out and it proves us wrong, they're like, oh, then everything you say must be bullshit. No, it's science, right?
Yeah, yeah. That's, I guess that's the thing. I've talked with other people about how I guess there's always a study to prove what you're trying to say, and there's always a study to disprove it too, right?
Absolutely. I mean, a prime example is tribulus. I mean, they have gone back and forth for 20 years now on tribulus, right? Yeah. So but it boosts testosterone, it doesn't boost testosterone.
Yeah, what's the deal? So, does it work or what? I guess there's probably no black and white answers what you're first going to tell me,
well,
right?
Okay, what I'll tell you is that the majority of studies show that it increases sexual activity. So okay. Certainly it makes you want to, you know, have sex more. So that might feel like a test boosting effect. The majority of studies also say that it doesn't boost testosterone. But there are some studies that say that it does. So, you know, it's kind of one of those weird, you know, maybe it's quantum physics, right? I mean, have you read about, you know, quantum physics where they're talking about, you know, quantum mechanics, where the intention of the person studying it will alter the effects of the study?
Yes, I have. Yeah.
But so if you look at something like, so tribulus is a prime example where, you know, overwhelmingly the research for 10 years has been, it doesn't work, it doesn't work, it doesn't work. And then all of a sudden a study comes out that says it does.
Yeah.
So, you know, you throw your hands up many times in those cases and say, you know, what the hell happened, right? I mean, so that's science, right? So, you know, if you look at that, you know, this kind of stuff is very complicated. And again, people want a one-size-fits-all answer, and they don't want to evolve. They want to just hold on to their beliefs, no matter what the data says or what new information has come out.
You know, it's something I've just kind of been pondering here while you've been talking, because my mind's kind of blown in a couple of ways. But one thing I'm thinking is, you know, not only are you a scientist and a researcher, but you're also a businessman. So if you're going to bring something to light, you want to do that because it's something that you could then, as you said earlier, you know, you would want to be able to eventually market this, right, to the U.S. I guess I'm kind of blown away to think, not only are you trying to figure out something new, but you're trying to figure out something new that would work within our laws and our system.
Yes, which makes it incredibly difficult.
Right. That's why my mind is blown here right now, actually.
Yeah, it's just a moving target, the laws that we have here. And I'll touch on the DMA stuff since I know that, I don't know, you or VJ had some questions on. I think it was VJ more that
I think,
wanted to.
It was me. He doesn't like it at all. I love the stuff personally. Yeah.
You know, I think it's decent. I don't think it's a particularly great fat burner. I think, you know, it's a good stimulant. I think it helps people with focus and intensity.
Yeah, that's what I get out of it for sure.
You know, I don't understand what the big brouhaha is about it. So, I mean, it is not that big of a deal, right? I mean, I don't think it's any more toxic or dangerous than synephrine or even caffeine for that matter. I mean, if you look at it, I mean, caffeine's really safe, but the FDA is cracking down, and rightly so, on people that are selling caffeine powders, because of course some idiot's going to grab, you know, a tablespoon of this stuff and down it, and that happened out in the UK. So someone downed a tablespoon of caffeine and died.
Wow.
So, you know, selling these raw powders to people is not always the best idea, especially for something like stimulants. So, you know, I'm not always on the side of the FDA, obviously, but, you know, in some cases I think, you know, they certainly have a right to step in and you know, and kind of monitor and warn people of those kinds of things. But here's the situation with DMA. So technically it is still legal to sell from what I can tell. And of course, you know, I've got a pretty good background. I was in law school for a year, but almost a year actually. But, you know, due to personal reasons, I dropped out. But it's technically still legal because it is in court. Currently, though, it's probably not being sold just because there's a lot of energy and negativity around it. So until the court case kind of works its way through, you know, it's kind of anyone's guess whether DMA will be legal or illegal. And, you know, so much of this stuff is based on simply just, you know, someone's dislike for it. So, you know, it was a non-issue for years and years and years when Pat Arnold was selling it. And then all of a sudden, you know, some of the Olympics people got on board and said, oh, you know, this is the public enemy number one. And then they refused to back down. I mean, they just they're I don't understand the logic there. You know, it's that, you know, inability to let go of something or believe that, you know, hey, that, you know, maybe you're wrong and just let it go. But typically those kinds of people can't.
Yeah. So has there been any kind of has there been more negative reports of people using DMA than other supplements that you're aware of? Or is it because you said it doesn't seem to be that big of a real problem.
No, I mean, I don't think so. I mean, if you look at the big one was the guys in the military that, you know, had, you know, heat stroke and died. I think there was one or two guys that had used a product with DMA and you know, died from it. But, you know, in further, you know, kind of looking at the autopsy and looking at the data, it appears they didn't, you know, it wasn't a causation. So it wasn't directly the cause of any kind of additional damage. Okay. It probably didn't help, you know,
yeah.
But it wasn't the cause of the cardiac problems, of the heart problems. So, you know, if you look at stuff like that, I mean, there's dangers in everything, and that's what people fail to realize, right? I mean, you know, you could run down the list of bee stings and vitamins and aspirin and, you know, all ibuprofen and you know, people die left and right from that kind of stuff. And supplements, by and large, are pretty safe. I mean, most of the time, they're just not an issue.
What's that other product? It's related to DMAA, DMHA. It's kind of a spinoff from it. Am I correct in that? DMHA. What do you think of that one?
Yeah. So DMHA is found in black walnuts. It is a very similar, you know, chemical cousin. So it's basically, you know, structurally very similar and has almost the same effects. It just isn't as strong. Mm. So it appears you need, you know, 2 to 4 times as much DMHA as you need DMAA. You know, interesting enough, though, Scott, again, a lot of this stuff is just a hype train,
yeah,
right? So DMHA is not setting the world on fire. People aren't demanding it because, you know, DMAA wasn't that much in demand until all of a sudden, you know, Jakt came out, and Jakt was just a very popular product.
Yeah.
And so, you know, people get this mentality that they have to have DMAA in their product or it's just not going to be the same.
Mm.
When reality, you know, 5 years down the road, no one remembers it anyway.
Yeah.
So it's really interesting, you know, and then they, you know, once there's, you know, there's this public scare that's out there, people have all these false, you know, symptoms and false, you know, adverse effects and stuff. So much of it is just kind of psychosomatic, if you will. So it's really crazy, the consumer market, and it's really hard to gauge the effectiveness as well as the, you know, the dangers of a product by looking at the public, because they, you know, they have all these false, you know, symptoms that don't really, you know, translate to anything, which is, again, what they found with the military officer or the military guys.
And
it wasn't the fault of the product.
It sounds like such a nightmare, too, to own a supplement company and to sell any of this stuff. I mean, I could just imagine just the lawsuits and the claims that start coming out once you start getting negative hype around a product like this.
Well, yeah. So one of the things that, you know, I implemented a long time ago and I think was kind of a problem is, you know, really making it clear that diet and exercise is the only thing that's going to get you in shape, right? Mm. A supplement's not going to do it for you. And I guess to you and I, Scott, right, we just think that comes, you know, that's just obvious.
It's inherent, right? You know,
but the average consumer kind of doesn't really view it that way. They really believe that they can get fit in a bottle and, you know, take a product and that's all they need. And that's, of course, never going to happen, right? I mean, you can't eat pizzas and you know, candy bars and take, you know, a couple of diet pills and think it's going to work for you.
Yeah,
it just doesn't work that way. So, you know, there's a lot of things supplement companies can do to reduce their exposure, you know, putting those kinds of things in there that really, you know, what's doing the work is diet and exercise, and supplements there just to assist you with your goals, not to make the goals happen. And people don't do that. So, you know, these outrageous claims kind of come and go. We've always tried to back away from that kind of stuff just because, you know, it was never a good strategy. Get you sued and get you in trouble and all kinds of stuff like that. So
that makes sense. Hey, while we're talking about supplements, and this is a great opportunity for me to be able to pick your brain about a couple things. What What are your thoughts on topical Yohimbine products, things like Vasoburn, stuff like that? Because I personally, I can't tell whether I see a difference or not, but I'll be damned if I didn't spend $50 on a bottle of it when I did a prep last year, just because I didn't want to risk not getting those, you know, additional fat loss, you know, gains.
Yeah, I don't think that topical Yohimbine is all that effective. I mean, I've done the research. It, if I remember correctly, it was a very minor increase in fat burning. So I don't think that they're probably all that effective. I mean, they certainly don't hurt. If you're down in contest range where, you know, every millimeter counts, then it's probably worth it. But if you're, you know, if you're a regular guy, it's not that useful. Topical caffeine is good. Hmm. You know, Yohimbine seems to add a little bit of a boost, but not all that effective. So very expensive, you know, for what you're getting.
Hmm, interesting. I've heard, you know, DMSO was the main carrier in the past to get things through topically. Are there any other carriers that are more effective that are out now?
You know, that's interesting. I don't think that's necessarily the case. I mean, if you look at it, you know, the skin actually pulls a lot of stuff through in general. Okay. I mean, DMSO does work, although it doesn't work on me, oddly enough. I mean, people say with DMSO that you're supposed to get this instant garlic taste in your mouth. I get none of that. I don't know if you've ever used it before, but I get none of that. I don't notice anything from DSO. So, you know, simple water and alcohol and some olive oil works really well to get things through the skin. So you can make a quick topical, which I'm going to talk to you about with skincare, a little bit of info on skincare, since, you know, bodybuilders certainly like to look good. And skin quality really gets hammered with all the tanning and all that other stuff.
Sure.
I mean, I can go into that real quickly. So, you know, I was experimenting with one of my pro hormones, 19-NOR DHEA, and it is one of the products that's, you know, kind of it's a natural SARM. But if you look at topical DHEA, 5-DHEA, the standard stuff you can buy in Walmart, it increases skin thickness and things like that. So I'm like, I wonder if 19-NOR DHEA would be even more effective because it's a C18, so it's got more of an estrogen skeleton, you know, and it. So I put some into a topical formula and made a skin cream out of it. And dude, I'm telling you, it was the craziest thing. Within literally 3 days, my skin has never looked clearer, and it's thicker and it's smoother. I mean, it is amazing stuff. So if you're interested, let me know. I can make you up a quick one to try out.
But why
I'm really thinking about bringing out a product because it was so miraculous how well it worked.
Well, help me understand. Why is it that it had this effect?
Well, you know, so hormones can increase collagen production and increase skin thickness. So both estrogens and androgens have that. And so the 19-NOR kind of is an intermediate. So the chances, like I said, were that it had a probably really good effect on that. And so it just has, you know, so the things that if you look at females, right, what makes female skin soft is the additional estrogen, right? Mm. So that's why they have that additional softness and elasticity. And so, you know, that's why they fall apart so quickly. If you look at females, right, they fall apart so quickly after menopause, they just go to hell. No offense to females, but you know, they literally just implode, right? When they start hitting their 40s, it's like, oh my God, what happened to Sue? You know, Sheila, right? So men, you know, then all of a sudden men, if you notice, men hit their like late 60s and then they just implode. So, if you look at it, cause you know, test levels get down to almost nothing at that point. So, you know, so I think, you know, the skin thickness and skin, you know, softness and elasticity is benefited by estrogens. And 19-NOR is a partial estrogen and a partial androgen. And so it probably stimulates both more effectively than one on its own. So by increasing the concentrations, it really had a great effect on my skin. So,
okay.
If you want to try it, let me know. It's amazing stuff.
That sounds amazing. I remember you talking before. We spoke at the gym about issues that people run into with acne while taking gear, and then the increased collagen production, increasing scarring. It was something I hadn't thought about before.
Right, and so that was the thing about you know, Anavar. So you know, again, Anavar is a great steroid for people. It's reasonably safe. You know, it's got a pretty good, you know, side effect profile. But again, it was used in burn victims. So, you know, it's going to increase, you know, the you know, production of skin cells, which it does. So you see a lot of cystic acne with women that take Anavar. Hmm. And, you know, that's just something that happens, right? So, you know, in addition to increasing, you know, the oiliness and all that other stuff, I believe Anavar also has an effect of kind of making and aggravating the cystic acne a lot worse. Hmm. So again, you know, we can disagree, but I personally think that nandrolone derivatives are a better choice for females and some males, depending on, you know, their body chemistry. But yeah, that's my theory, is that I'm a big fan of things like 19-Nors, like nandrolone versus Anavar for most females. You know, low dose of 19-Nor steroids, I think, is a good thing for females.
Would you think like a nandrolone phenylpropionate, so it was more controllable, say, versus like a long acting DECA type thing? Is that where you're going with this?
No, I think I would go with the DECA just really? Because, I don't think that females want wild swings, in their androgen levels. Okay. So I think a smoother curve would be better for females. So, you know, just using a decanoate with, more frequent injections maybe, but lower doses. So maybe like a quarter milliliter, but three times a week might be better for a female. And don't take this as not medical advice.
Absolutely.
But, so I would, that's what I'm just, you know, just off the top of my head. I'm a really big fan of nandrolone in a lot of cases, because I think while it does have some downsides, I think it also has a lot of positive for steroid users, particularly mentally and in brain function. So those DHTs really can cause people to lose their temper and have, you know, a lot of, anxiety and things like that. So if you want, I want to switch to that topic about testosterone boosting and recovery, since this is a show about those kinds of things.
Yeah, absolutely. It's definitely important. I feel like, especially for the guys that are coming off between cycle, you know, I think that it's just as important to be able to recover from your cycle as it is to get the progress. Because if you don't recover, then you can't really maintain what you've gained, right?
Right. And, you know, so here is what I noticed a long time ago. And you know, I get a lot of flack about this one as well. Testosterone boosters don't work. Okay. They just don't. I mean, the most of them on the market don't work. And I'll tell you, the one that was the most effective that was ever on the market and was well studied was Novadex XT by Gaspari. And it, you know, in 6-oxo similarly, it boosted testosterone. So the normal range is, you know, 150 to 1200 nanograms per deciliter, right? So you've probably heard that. That's the standard range for most men.
Yeah.
And you know, Scott, it makes sense. You know, a bunch of steroid users where, you know, they're like, dude, I got my test levels checked and they're like 180 and that, you know, they're crying the blues.
Oh yeah.
But they still look great, right? It's just more of a mental thing, right? They still look fine.
Yeah.
You know, they're just, you know, and they're just worried the fact that their test levels are so low. Well, what I realized is if you look at Novadex XT, they did the studies at 1200 nanograms per deciliter, there was no additional muscle gain. Zero mass gain. So what that means is taking your you know, body up to the highest natural level doesn't seem to do anything. And so I looked into that and I said, well, okay, something else is going on here, right? I mean, that should, if you got a guy who started at 300 and he's at 1200, right? You're getting four times the test levels that you had before. We should see some muscle gain, but we're not seeing it.
Yeah.
So something else is going on. And so what I started dipping into was androgen receptor sensitivity. And so what I try to explain to people is the androgen receptor will upregulate and downregulate all the time based on, you know, the biological feedback and the levels that you have.
Makes sense.
It's kind of like T3. Have you ever heard that T3 causes immediate shutdown and, you know, but you recover, you know, after a couple of days, you don't need a PCT for any kind of thyroid hormone. Have you heard that before?
I have. Yeah.
Okay. But you know, you need T3 to live, right? If you don't have T3 in your system, you die.
Hmm.
So, you know, or you have some serious problems, right?
Yeah.
Cardiac issues, all kinds. So what happens? I mean, if your T3 levels are abnormally low because you were doing, you know, Cytomel, why aren't you dropping dead or having cardiac arrest or massive anxiety or all the other side effects? Hmm. Well, chances are that the thyroid is so important that your, you know, receptors will upregulate significantly to use any thyroid hormone that's available, or even things that bind to it and activate it. So they will kind of open up. So think of them as like a wrench, right? So they will just open up and take in anything.
Hmm.
So that is an example of a receptor that is, you know, very flexible, because people typically don't, you know, titrate down on T3. You know, they just stop, right?
Yeah.
I mean, and they don't drop dead and they don't have cardiac problems and they don't have anxiety. They just, you know, they move along and everything's fine. So if you look at testosterone range, so 1200 isn't causing any muscle gain. Typically 300 isn't causing any muscle loss, because the receptor is going to open and close or become more and less sensitive based on what your levels are.
I see.
So what happens is you got to get to a level where you're well above that, I think, before you see any muscle growth. As well as, you know, if you want to see really good recovery and solid recovery. And so the problem with that is no one does it right, Scott. What they do is they keep trying to boost LH. Okay. So, I mean, you're familiar with LH, right? Luteinizing hormone. It, you know, it will go and bind to the testes and trigger a response, trigger you to make more testosterone. So I always say it's kind of like, you know, the gas pedal on your car, right? So if you step on the gas pedal, it's only going to go so fast. I don't care how hard you step on it. So you can stack tamoxifen and HCG and letrozole, and it's only going to go so fast, right? Yes. That's it. So
I like that analogy.
Yeah, when you look at recovery, we want to do the same thing that you would do to deck out your engine, right? Make it high performance. So you'd get better carbs, you'd get better, you know, better cams, you know, all the other things that you need, exhaust, right? So you do everything to increase the entire engine. Now when you step on the gas, it goes a lot faster, right? So if you look at what I would, you know, suggest people do is they want to sensitize and upregulate the entire process. So let's, you know, I'll make it kind of quick. But if you look at your Leydig cells.
You don't have to make it quick. This is fascinating stuff.
Yeah. So if you want to get better binding from your LH and HCG, you want to sensitize your Leydig cells. Well, an herb called astragalus, it's actually, I think, astragalus radix. So I think it's not the one that you commonly buy on Amazon. But there is a form of astragalus. I can send you the study if you want to throw it on your website.
Sure.
That will increase Leydig cell sensitivity. That's a great thing, right? So you're pounding down the HCG and the tamoxifen, and you want to get better activity and better performance out of that, you know, upregulate your Leydig cells so they're more sensitive to this stuff. So the next thing then, you would want to increase your substrate. So what you make testosterone out of, and that you want to make with cholesterol. And so as I was telling DJ, the best source of cholesterol is eggs. Eggs are extremely good for you. And cholesterol is not heart damaging. Oxidized cholesterol is what damages the heart. So taking cholesterol from bacon and, you know, heavily seared meats and things like that is not good for you. But eggs that aren't scrambled, so when you boil an egg or poach an egg, it actually leaves that sac in place and leaves the cholesterol protected from the oxygen. So you're actually getting pure cholesterol into your system,
really,
which is an amazing thing to have when you're trying to boost testosterone, because that's what your body makes testosterone out of. So if you're trying to recover, you know, in addition to these other things, eat a lot of whole eggs, but not things like bacon and such like that. But whole eggs will give you that cholesterol to make more testosterone.
I've heard this before. I was unaware, though, about the scrambling part, that you shouldn't scramble them. I didn't realize that.
Yeah, because it gets exposed to oxygen, and high heat and oxygen is what oxidizes the cholesterol. And so if you look it up, you'll see that the arterial damage is caused by oxidized cholesterol. And so that's why statins don't really work that well, because they don't get rid of the oxidized cholesterol. They just get rid of the cholesterol that your liver is making, which is relatively unhealthy. So you can upregulate the enzymes that turn the cholesterol into testosterone. There's, you know, 3-beta and 17-beta-HSD, and you can upregulate that by using forskolin. Star protein, which is another enzymatic conversion. You can take ginger. So, you know, concentrated ginger extract will increase star protein. Vitamin D is a great coenzyme for increasing testosterone production. And things like zinc will also increase testosterone production, zinc and magnesium, because it helps to, you know, speed up the process, as well as take a good multivitamin with probably an extra B vitamin supplements. And again, I have to, you know, suggest to everyone, this is not medical advice. Talk to your doctor before you, you know, start any diet and exercise program, and, you know, don't take any supplements without talking to your doctor. But, you know, things like zinc, magnesium will also help upregulate this process. So I think if you do that, you're going to get better and faster recovery. And then what I'd like to see people start to do is sensitize their androgen receptors. So force that androgen receptor to be more sensitive. And you can do that with coconut oil. Works really, really well for that, MCTs and coconut oil. Only about a 13% increase, but, you know, 13% is 13%. Zinc is really good for sensitizing the androgen receptor, and then L-carnitine, L-tartrate. So that also helps to sensitize the androgen receptor. So I think if we give someone their HCG and their tamoxifen, but also kind of supercharge the engine and increase, you know, the receptor activity, we're going to get people with much healthier recoveries that feel better and that, you know, don't have the downsides of slamming all these chemicals into their body. So I'm not a big fan of overdoing it on tamoxifen or Clomid or any of those things. I think small doses are fine, but I personally wouldn't take large doses of the stuff, because you know, there's side effects to it and downsides to it.
Sure. Have you ever seen what they call the Power PCT?
I have not.
It's a stack of Clomid and Novadex and HCG, all at high doses too. So you would recommend, if you were, and of course you're not recommending, but from your research, what would be more beneficial for a PCT if someone were to use Clomid or Novadex at a low dose, that is?
I think that it's a toss up. I think they're, you know, they're about equal. Both have their positives. I tend to prefer Clomid because it seems to have less IGF-1 lowering properties.
Oh, okay.
But plenty of people like tamoxifen, and tamoxifen's good too. You know, believe it or not, you need estrogen receptor beta activity to build muscle. So tamoxifen does stimulate that. So tamoxifen does have a good track record for that, but it does lower IGF-1 levels. So it's kind of one of those toss up things. So but I think either one of those are good, and I think. You know, those are some of the best ones, but again, just don't overdo it and don't take, how people are. They get these crazy, research chemicals. They don't know what they're taking. They don't shake them up and they're taking, 100 milligrams because, a little bit is good. More must be better.
Yeah. Yeah.
So.
Yeah. That's kind of why I asked, because I feel like what a lot of people do is they don't know which is better. And so they just end up, well, I'll do both. They're not expensive. I'll get them both. Hey, you were talking too before the show, a little bit about some thoughts on hair loss. Could you share those with us?
Sure. And so, hair loss, kind of the same thing. If you look at hair loss, it's a pretty complicated process. I've been kind of digging into it. I started losing my hair at 28. And, I remember sitting in a conference and I looked down and there was a pile of hair in front of me.
Not a good feeling.
Freaking out. I'm like, oh man, that is the last thing I need is to be bald. Right. So, I'm not that good looking of a guy. I don't want to be bald on top of it. So, I'm like, well, what am I going to do? So the, Propecia was out. So I went and I got a script for Propecia and, I used it and, it stopped the hair loss. And then I stopped it and I realized that hair loss never came back. So meaning that the thinning, it just stopped and that was it. I only did one course of Propecia and no more. And I never lost any additional hair. And I started looking into hair loss much more significantly. And I realized that there's kind of two types of hair loss. And again, the same thing, which is really strange when you look at it. There's the people that lose the hair in the front and then people that lose their hair kind of on the top, right? The skull cap.
Yeah.
And why is that? And they're not the same, right? So if you look at Rogaine works for people that lose it on the skull cap, but does not work for the people that lose it on the front. So those two tissues have individualized follicles. There's something different about them. And that's bizarre when you think about it, right?
I mean, absolutely.
Looks like the same hair, but Rogaine doesn't work on both of them. It only works on one. So what's the cause of that? And Propecia doesn't work that well for the frontal reduction. So I started digging into it and I looked at, I found a study that actually they put topical tamoxifen on people that were balding and grew all their hair back.
Hmm.
And so Nizoral is another one. It's a, it's an aromatase inhibitor, right? So that
is that
also,
the way Nizoral works? I didn't know that. I use it.
I don't think Nizoral works very well. I've only heard one person tell me that it works well. And he told me the guy grew all of his hair back like a, he looked like Stalin, borrow from Seinfeld. But what he did is he soaked his head with Nizoral, put on a shower cap, and then went to sleep, and then shampooed it out the next morning.
Huh. And he did this, obviously, for an extended period of time, repeatedly.
Yes, for 30, up to 30 days. I think he did it for a month.
Okay.
And he grew all of his hair back, which is another thing that I think people really struggle with hair loss because it's got to stay on there. So actually, I started looking at it, and I found that, there's two different types. It looks like DHT is more implicated in the skull cap reduction. So, DHT and blood flow. So that, the back of the head, those kinds of areas. And it appears to me that, that estrogen plus DHT, causes thinning, but also causes that frontal hair loss.
Mm.
So higher hormone levels will cause that frontal hair loss. And I believe that that's a combination of DHT plus estrogen that causes the people to lose it in the front.
That makes sense.
This is what I try to explain to people. It's not something so simple where you're like, oh, just, throw on some Propecia or take some Rogaine and it just all comes back. It just doesn't work that easily. And so here's an example of something that should be relatively simple, hair. And, the front and the back have two different follicles.
Yeah.
Something different about them. I don't know exactly what, but something is definitely different. So, you know, we're developing for Mind and Muscle a shampoo, a hair loss shampoo plus a hair loss gel that will help to reduce estrogen, increase blood flow, and also increase the production, you know, the thickening of the hair. And so hopefully we'll have that out within the next couple of weeks. But I think it's really going to help people to restore some of their hair volume.
Interesting. I'm sure, hey, if there's a chance, I'm sure people will want to try it. There's no question about that.
Yeah, and I've had some really good success with it, and a lot of it is just you know, increasing blood flow, reducing DHT, reducing estrogen, you know, and helping to nourish and stimulate the follicles. So you know, that I think will really help people, because hair loss is just such a miserable side effect, right? I think you know, bitch tits and hair loss are probably the two worst things that you can get.
Yeah, followed by acne, right? Well, I mean, I guess some type of internal organ problem would probably be the absolute worst, but the things we can see, yes,
right. The nuisance stuff. Yeah, acne must be bad. I've been very blessed, never had acne, so I bet it's miserable. So,
I'm sorry, go ahead.
I haven't dug into that, so I don't know enough about acne.
I can say with the Nizoral, I have had a prescription for the 2% Nizoral for, I'm going to say, 8 years now, and I use it on a regular basis. Has it slowed my hair loss down? Honestly, I can't say, because I can't compare it to anything, whether I would have lost more or not. Otherwise, it's still falling out at a slow rate over the years, but it definitely has not arrested it. I can tell you that much.
You want me to get a test bottle of the shampoo when I'm and hair gel?
I'd love to try it. Yeah, I'd love to try it and see if it does anything for me. That'd be great.
Yeah, I mean, I like to put the products up there, and you know, it doesn't work for everybody. You know, not everything works for everybody, but I'm pretty confident it will. I think you'll see a definite effect. The other one I'm trying to do is reverse graying. That's another one. I don't want to go gray. But
that's something else I've dealt with. I think I've dealt with more graying than actual hair loss. And you know what? Now, what I understand, you can correct me if I'm wrong here. I've heard that as you get older and as you age, it has something to do with growth hormone. And I supplement with growth hormone. I would have thought that I could have maintained the pigment better with my growth hormone replacement. But it's honestly, I don't think it's done anything to help.
No, I've never read that growth hormone has an impact on pigment. I just have never read that.
Well, but what do you know about it so far? What have you heard or learned?
I haven't really delved too much in. I haven't delved into it yet, just because I'm just getting started on it, because I've been pretty lucky. I don't have a lot of gray hair, but I'm starting to get there on the sides. So I'm kind of on the fence, right? You know, chicks even like the graying on the side, but I don't know. I want to keep my dark hair, so. Maybe for another show, once I dig into it a little bit more. I have not looked at it, but I've never read anything about growth hormone causing that effect. There's some herbs that's supposed to help. Mucuna, the one with DOPA in it, is supposed to help.
Okay, well, interesting. I'll definitely look forward to hearing what you research about that. And I'm sure as you continue to age, this will become more and more of a thing. Eventually, you'll demand to find out, because it'll be like for your own purposes. You know, you'll want to solve it for yourself, right?
Yeah, absolutely. That's why the skin cream was such a big thing for me, because I like to look good. I like to date young girls. Don't repeat that. But yes, I like to date younger girls. I don't want to date girls in their 40s and 50s. So you got to look good. So I'm trying to keep that younger look as long as possible. Yeah. And
I can't blame you.
It's a personal thing for me. So kind of the final. I don't know how much time we have left, but I can go into a little bit of my myostatin research if you're interested in that.
Yeah, I'd love to hear it. I haven't heard anything beneficial about myostatin stuff. I mean, here's what I know, and I'll start out with that, because this is very limited, and then I'd love to be educated on it. From what I understand, there was, when follistatin first came out, there was an untagged version, and it worked very well, and then something about after it being tagged, it stopped working. And that's all I've ever heard. This is from a friend who had the untagged stuff, and since then, he said that he's seen no actual follistatin on the market that actually helped with myostatin, and he's heard of nothing else that's worked, and I've heard of nothing else that's worked. So whatever you have to share with us is definitely going to be of interest to me.
Well, that that actually makes sense. I'm a big proponent of follistatin, because I hoped that it would work, right, and it would cause an effect, and I tried it and it didn't do anything for me either. Did absolutely nothing. I didn't notice anything from it.
Okay.
So, I'm one to try a few things. And so I really dug into myostatin research, and there's a lot of myostatin inhibitors that are natural. And one of them is an over-the-counter drug that you can take. And so what I did is I bought a bunch of them. And again, what I think it comes down to, again, Scott, is there's a threshold that you have to get past before you start to see an effect. So, you know, again, there's a certain amount of reduction where I believe that you're not going to see any benefit from it. And then once you cross that threshold, so, you know, what I've noticed, and I stacked pretty much every myostatin inhibitor out there. So epicachin gallate, I don't know if you know, epicachin, not the gallate, sorry, just okay. Epicachin from green tea and from a few other sources. That's one of them. There is also sulforaphane in broccoli. There's calcium lactate, which is a product I brought to market originally for bodybuilding, which is amazing stuff. It boosts LH levels. It reduces myostatin. It helps to increase, thermogenesis. Because what it does is, you know, so here's the other thing I want to tell you about lactic acid and lactate. So lactic acid is not what causes the burn in muscle cells. It's actually pyruvic acid from what I've read. Lactic acid actually then gets converted to lactate. Lactate spills out into the bloodstream, and that's a signaling molecule that says to the body, hey, you just worked out really hard, so let's increase all these anabolic processes. So by taking calcium lactate, you're actually getting lactate in the bloodstream, and you're sort of tricking the body to believing that you've had a really tough workout. So I found calcium lactate to work really well. I put it in our Rise and Swell. A couple other products that we had had it in over the time. But it's a calcium lactate. I took creatine monohydrate because creatine monohydrate will reduce myostatin levels. And then if you take I can go look in a second, but it's I think phenylpseudoephrine. It's a decongestant. You can get it at the dollar store, man. So they sell it at the dollar store. Yeah. So it's the most available, cheapest nasal decongestant you can find. It also is a follistatin increasing agent.
No kidding.
So I stacked all of those for 30 days.
Yeah.
And all I can say is be careful what you wish for, because myostatin inhibition, and I don't know if you know what your friend will tell you, it is so strong and so pronounced that the contractile strength from the muscles is almost too strong.
Huh.
So my workouts are so short now, and they literally I can fatigue the muscle really quickly. And it's very interesting when I need that strength to, you know, do some work, like I was moving some slate plates for my friend. Okay. I have the strength to do it, but in the gym, I can fatigue much more quickly, and I get a lot bigger, a lot faster. So it's, you know, if you really like long, grueling workouts, it's not going to be for you to reduce myostatin. But I found that by reducing myostatin, but you know, again, a lot of it is your muscle fiber makeup, right? Yeah. So I have more of that Mike Tyson type muscle fibers where it's, you know, really short, explosive power. Mainly meant for pushing, not meant for pulling, believe it or not.
Okay.
So I don't have the same pulling strength that I do pushing strength. So again, there's just such variations, and I notice all this kind of stuff, but if you want, I can, I'm going to put together a supplement that contains all the myostatin blockers.
No kidding.
Not all of them, but all of them plus the plus the OTC one would be a really great stack. HMB is another one that reduces myostatin, and I put that in there. Leucine does as well, but HMB seems to be better. So, I think that if you do that properly, you're actually going to find that it does work.
You're always exploring, man. You're always thinking outside of the box.
I like to push the envelope, man. I always do. I've always been into that stuff. And luckily, I've got a pretty good genetics, so I haven't killed myself yet.
How long have you been in this business, in this world?
I started in about 90, I believe it was 99 or early 2000. I got onto bodybuilding.com right when they switched over from being like a text-based forum to the kind of forum that we know now.
Yeah.
And, stumbled across Pat Arnold and a bunch of people, Bruce Kneller particularly. I loved Bruce Kneller when he used to write for TMag under Brock, whatever it was. I can't remember. But he was great because he was funny and he was interesting and he always talked big. It was like, watching a pro wrestler, right? He was the pro wrestler of steroids. Bruce Kneller is a great guy. I don't know if you know him. I mean, people, may love him or hate him, but I've known him for a long time. He's a really good dude. And so I used to read TMag, and then I stumbled across bodybuilding.com and a couple other forums. Anabolic Minds was another one that we stumbled across. And, they're great guys. And, so I was one of the first people, I believe, to inject 4AD. So Pat sent out some 4AD, and I think he got – people were afraid to inject it, and I think I got some. And I remember kind of cooking it up and putting it into vials, and I injected it. So, you know, it was kind of one of those stupid things. I remember my girlfriend at the time was like, what is wrong with you? She's like, you're going to kill yourself. But I've always been kind of interested in that stuff. So, you know, it's really fascinating. I've always liked pushing the envelope on those things.
It's a wild world. The supplement industry itself is just a wild world.
It is, but there's so much good that can come out of it. And there's also so much scamming, but, you know.
I guess it all goes together, man. Why don't you tell us where people can reach out to you, and if they want to, you know, because I want people to know. So it's mindandmuscle.net is the first place I want everyone to go. But you guys have more than just a store. You have tons of articles and information there as well, right?
Yeah, we actually have a boatload of articles, probably more than we can manage. So we're redesigning the site to kind of make it more friendly to search and find things.
Okay.
But you can reach out to, sales@mindandmuscle.com. That'll go to me directly. And, you can just go check out the website. I'm always on there. I'm on Anabolic Minds Forum, so you can hit me up on there a lot. So those are really the three places I go.
Man, that's awesome. Guys, if you do go there, you can use code BNR10 for a little bit of an additional savings, too. So what's on the future here? What are we going to hear from you next? Where are you going? You've got the myostatin thing that you're working on. You've got the hair thing that you're working on. Is there anything else that you need us to know about? Because this is all fascinating to me, and it's cool to hear how your mind works.
I really think that I'm going to go into more of the skincare development and skin quality development because you know, it's a kind of an interesting newer market. It's got a lot bigger potential. So those kinds of things I think is probably where I'm going to start to spend my time. Like I said, we've got the new pro hormone that we're going to probably hopefully license to high tech. Nice. So that they can manufacture it and distribute it. But it looks really cool. So it's another pro hormone to one testosterone. And it looks like it has some good inherent activity on its own. It's a progestin, so it's not a Schedule 3 or anything of that nature. And so I think it'll stack really well with the current pro hormones that are on the market. So, that's really the areas that I'm looking at for right now.
Nice. Well, this has been really cool. Thank you for being with us. We really appreciate it, Eric. This is cool.
All right. I appreciate it, man. If you have any questions, get a hold of me via email, everyone. So thanks a lot for having me on, Scott. And, we'll talk to you soon.
Absolutely. Guys, for Advices Radio, I'm Scott McNally with Eric Markowitz of Mind and Muscle. We'll see you soon. Get this body clean. Get this body clean.